Well, here we go. I'll just say it because y'all know what I'm going to say. It goes like this. Turn with me, if you will, to the place where this week's Torah portion begins. We are starting a brand new, well, it's an old book, but it's a new book, at least this Torah cycle. And that would be in English, Leviticus. In Hebrew, it's the first word in the book. And it says, Vayikra, and called Yahuwah, al Moshe. And he spoke to him out of the tent of meeting, the Mikdash, the Ohel of meeting. And what's interesting about this first verse is a couple things. One, it's got one of the many jots and tittles is the English phrase for it. The Aleph at the end of Vayikra is small, smaller than a normal Aleph. And so people always ask why. Well, and the answer is we're not 100% sure, but one of the things that is claimed is that the scribal notation indicates that this is the opposite of Adam, that Moshe is a meek individual. He is not trying to accelerate or accentuate his stature. So, and there's one other element in this, and that is that Rashi points out that there are a couple of ways of saying that the Hebrew verb here. And essentially the two have to do with whether or not this is something that is just happens, you know, like a chance meeting. Hey, over there, how you doing? Okay, or something that is done in love. And the indication from the verb, according to the Hebrew expert Rashi, is that it's a calling in love to Moshe. And that might help to explain the small Aleph as well. Well, okay, what does he say? He says, speak unto the B'nai Israel, tell them the following. When any man of you brings an offering, and that word here is korban in this case, an offering unto Yahuwah, you will bring your offering of the cattle, even of the herd of the flock. And the root word for korban evidently means it is of us, something that is offered of us. And then we're going to get some specifications, and this is where people say, oh, this is the boring stuff in Vayikra and Leviticus. And I will contend that there is a lot in here, and it's kind of interesting. And, of course, one of the things that the whore church misses by ignoring the things that they say are done away with. Now, they're not necessarily done away with because they are. You know, Yahushua said that not one yod or tittle would be done away with as long as heaven and earth still exist. Well, they do. So, obviously, that's not the case. But on the other hand, the place where he put his name does not exist. We cannot physically do this. We can still make different kinds of offerings. But, yeah, to the extent that this is not physically possible anymore in most cases, fine, but there's a lot of value in understanding it. So let's go through it and see what it says. So when a man brings an offering, it's going to be out of the cattle or the herd of the flock. And if it's a burnt offering, now the word there in Hebrew is olah, from the herd. It is to be the following, a male without blemish. He brings it to the door of the tent of meeting, and that he may be accepted before Yahuwah. Now, what I've always thought was kind of interesting about this, and this is one of those places where I'll add just a little bit, hopefully, of my own understanding from having raised animals. Now, I hadn't done that before when I first started studying Torah, but I do think there's some value in it and some things that we begin to appreciate that maybe I didn't, and a lot of folks don't. If they've never dealt with animals, especially things like goats or cattle, it says this, man who brings this offering is to lay his hand upon the head of the burnt offering, and it shall be accepted for him to make atonement for him. So this whole idea of lay his hand is kind of interesting. Why? And I can't tell you that we know the reason for it, but having gone through it and having raised animals, I can kind of suggest that, at least to me, this is an emotional issue. There's an attachment. Now, maybe if the man just buys the animal, he doesn't have the attachment. But if he's raised it, I guarantee you, there's bound to be some attachment to put your hand upon the head of this animal that is shortly going to give up its life as an offering is got to be moving. I can't believe for a second. And you know, having raised animals, I know that that's the case. He shall kill the bullock before Yahuwah, Aaron's sons, the Kohanim, shall present the blood, dash the blood round about the altar at the door of the tent of meeting, and then he shall flay the burnt offering, cut it into its pieces, and the sons of Aaron the Kohen shall put fire on the altar and lay the wood in order upon the fire. And Aaron's sons, the Kohanim, the priests, they'll lay those pieces, the head, the suet, in order upon the wood that's on the fire upon the altar. A lot of specifications here for how it's going to be done. Some of this is going to be repetitious. Its innards and its legs he washes with water. The Kohen then makes the whole thing smoke on the altar for an olah, a burnt offering. Now, olah actually means lifted up. So that's what happens. The fire goes up. It's an offering made by fire, a sweet savor unto Yahuwah. And if his offering is one of the flock, whether it's of the sheep or of the goats, both of them, of course, clean animals, for a burnt offering, he shall offer, again, a male without blemish. And he shall kill it on the side of the altar north before Yahuwah. Aaron's sons, the Kohanim, shall dash its blood around the altar all about, cut it into pieces. Priest lays it on them with its head and its suet in order on the wood on the fire upon the altar. Notice the same verbiage. The innards and the legs he washes with water. Priest shall offer the whole, make it smoke upon the altar. It is a burnt offering, an offering made by fire, of a sweet savor unto Yahuwah. Now, if his offering to Yahuwah shall be a burnt offering of fowls or birds, then he brings his offering of turtle doves or young pigeons. This time the Kohen brings it under the altar, pinches off its head, makes its smoke on the altar. The blood thereof shall be drained out on the side of the altar. He takes away its crop, which is the little place in the front where it digests and holds food. The feathers, cast it beside the altar on the east part, in place where the ashes are. Then he rends it by the wings thereof, but does not divide it asunder. The priest shall make it smoke upon the altar, on the wood that's on the fire. It is a burnt offering, an olah, an offering made by fire, a sweet savor unto Yahuwah. Now, the second chapter says that when there is a nefesh. Now, the rendering in my English rendering here says, when any one. But I think it's interesting. The word in Hebrew is when any soul brings a meal offering unto Yahuwah. So meal offering is going to be grain of some kind. It is to be a fine flour. He pours oil upon it. He puts frankincense on it. He brings it to Aaron's sons, the Kohanim. He takes from this thing a handful of the fine flour and of the oil together with the frankincense. And the priest shall make the memorial part. In other words, what's the word that we use for the bread? The part that's taken out. Anyway, he makes a memorial part smoke upon the altar, and it's an offering made by fire of a sweet savor unto Yahuwah. Okay, so challah was the word I was looking for there. That which is left of the meal offering is for Aaron. It's his and his sons. It is a thing most kadosh, set apart, of the offerings of Yahuwah made by fire. So it belongs to Aaron to eat. When you bring a meal offering baked in the oven, it's to be unleavened cakes, fine flour mingled with oil, or unleavened wafers spread with oil. If your offering is a meal offering baked on a griddle, it's to be fine flour, again unleavened, mixed or mingled with oil. The priest, you shall break it in pieces, pour oil on it. It is a meal offering. And that word, of course, is mincha, a meal offering. Now, if this offering, this korban, is a mincha from the stewing pan, it's to be made with fine flour, with oil. You bring the meal offering that is made of these things unto Yahuwah, and it will be presented unto the Kohen, and he brings it unto the altar. The priest takes off from it a memorial part thereof, and makes that smoke upon the altar. It is, right, an offering made by fire of a sweet savor unto Yahuwah, but that which is left of the meal offering belongs to Aaron. It shall be Aaron's and his sons. It is a thing most kadosh, set apart, of the offerings of Yahuwah made by fire. So again, understand that one of the things, one of the primary purposes of the offering, of course, this is how Aaron and his sons, the Kohanim, this is how they eat. It is for their sustenance. No meal offering which you shall bring unto Yahuwah shall be made with leaven. So it's not got any leavening or yeast in it. You shall make no leaven nor any honey smoke as an offering made by fire unto Yahuwah. As an offering of first fruits, you can bring them unto Yahuwah. But they are not to come up as a sweet savor on the altar. Every meal offering of mine you shall season with salt, nor shall you suffer the salt of the covenant of your El to be lacking from any meal offering. In other words, always have salt, and that's what it says. With all your offerings you shall offer salt. And when. Now, Rashi takes issue with the word, some English translations say, if you bring a meal offering. He says when, because this should happen. Of first fruits unto Yahuwah, bring for the meal offering of your first fruits corn in the ear, parched with fire, or groats of the fresh ear. You put oil on it, lay frankincense thereon. It is a mincha, an oil offering. And the priest again makes a memorial part of that smoke, even of the groats thereof, and the oil thereof, with all the frankincense thereof. It is an offering made by fire unto Yahuwah. Now, if his offering is a shalamim, peace offering, it's a sacrifice or a zebak of shalamim, then if he offers of the herd, whether it's male or female, he shall offer it without blemish before Yahuwah. So a maimed or an animal that is crippled or whatever is not a suitable sacrifice. He lays his hand upon the head of his offering, kills it at the door of the tent of meeting, and Aaron's sons, the Kohanim, shall dash the blood against the altar round about. He shall present of the sacrifice of shalamim, of peace offerings, an offering made by fire unto Yahuwah. The fat that covers the innards, all the fat that's upon the innards, the two kidneys and the fat that's on them, by the loins, the lobe above the liver, and which he shall take away hard by the kidneys. Aaron's sons shall make it smoke on the altar upon the wood the burnt offering, which is on the wood, on the fire. It's an offering, again, made by fire of a sweet savor unto Yahuwah. For his offering, if it is a zebak of shalamim unto Yahuwah, and it's of the flock, whether it's male or female, it is again to be without blemish. If he brings a lamb for his offering, then he shall present it before Yahuwah. And he lays his hand upon the head of his offering. Again, notice the hand upon the head. Kills it before the tent of meeting. Aaron's son shall dash the blood thereof against the altar round about. And he shall present of the zebach of peace offerings an offering made by fire unto Yahuwah. The fat thereof, fat tail, the entire thing, he shall take it away hard by the rump bone, and the fat that covers the innards, all the fat that's on those, the two kidneys and the fat on them, which is by the loins, the lobe above the liver, take away all of it by the kidneys. The priest shall make it smoke upon the altar. It is the food of the offering made by fire unto Yahuwah. Now, if he offers a goat, then he shall present it before Yahuwah. He lays his hand again, same place, on the head, kills it before the tent of meeting, and the sons of Aaron shall dash the blood thereof against the altar round about. And he shall present thereof his offering, even an offering made by fire unto Yahuwah. Same thing as before. The fat that covers the innards, all the fat that's on the innards, the two kidneys, and the fat that's on them, which is by the loins, the lobe above the liver, which he shall take away by the kidneys. And the priest shall make them smoke upon the altar. It is the food of the offering made by fire. For a sweet savor, all the fat is Yahuwah's. All the fat is to be is for Yod Heh Vav Heh. And this, here come these words again. It is a huchat olam, a perpetual statutes. You don't have to know why, just do it, and it's forever, throughout your generations and all your dwellings, that you shall eat neither fat nor blood. Now, this is important. A lot of the things, notice, that we've been talking about in this Torah portion, we can't offer. The Kohanim, as a group that we know of, there may be a gene that can be identified in the DNA, but other than that, we do not know or have an official set of Kohanim at this point, nor do we have a place for them to make these offerings. But on the other hand, you can eat or should eat neither fat nor blood. That, because it says it's a perpetual statute, that we can still do. So don't eat fat nor blood. Now, and I guess one of the things you'll note about both of these is, does that mean that if there's so much as a, you know, one little corpuscle of blood or a fat molecule in there that you've violated it? No. That's obviously not what you're talking about, because you can't physically, they wouldn't have had the technology, and even today it would be almost impossible to get rid of every, tiny, tiny bit of blood or fat. But what we can do is cut the fat off and drain the blood. So that's essentially what it's talking about. We don't eat them especially. Next chapter says, Yahuwah then spoke unto Moshe, and he said the following, speak unto the B'nai Israel, saying the following, if any one shall sin through error. Now let's pause. As we go through this, I'm going to note, this is key and it's very important. Is one of the things that the Sunday church just tends to completely ignore. because you'll hear it taught, oh, we don't have any more sacrifice. There's no sacrifice that remains. Well, Paul, of course, as you know, made offerings in the temple that would have been considered sacrifices because of a Nazirite vow after the time of Yeshua. So that's not a correct teaching. But notice one other thing. We're going to see this in this entire chapter 4 and into the next one, that it says if somebody sins through error, they make a mistake, they didn't know, then what? And you notice, we're not talking about deliberate rebellion. I knew it, I don't give a blankety blank. The heck with the God of the Bible. That is not at all what we're talking about. This is sinning through error. And of course, here's the key. As we go through this, you're going to see that there is I like to call it like a wood cutting, where the negative image tells the story. Because what is pointedly missing is a sacrifice, any sacrifice, for deliberate, intentional rebellion to Him. That is what we're not going to see. So, if anybody sins through error, though, in any of the things which Yahuwah has commanded not to be done, but he ends up doing one of them, then if it's going to be one of these following types. So if it is the anointed Cohen who does that, wow, see, you'd think he might know better. But he sins so as to bring guilt on the people, then let him offer for his sin. Now, the root word here is kata, which he has sinned, a young bull without blemish, unto Yahuwah for a sin offering. So the sin offering is a chatat. And he brings the young bull under the door of the tent of meeting before Yahuwah. He lays, again, his hand upon the head of the bull and kills the bullock before Yahuwah. So here we see it again. Lay your hand on the head of this animal. This animal is going to die. And it's sad. You didn't know any better. Poor animal suffers for your ignorance. And the anointed priest shall take the blood of the bullock and bring it to the tent of meeting. And the priest shall now, he does this triple dip. He dips his finger in the blood, and he sprinkles the blood 7 times before Yahuwah in front of the veil of the sanctuary. And then he puts the blood upon the horns of the altar of sweet incense before Yahuwah in the tent of meeting. And all the remaining blood of the bullock shall he pour out at the base of the altar burnt offering, which is at the door of the tent of meeting. And the fat of the bullock of the sin offering, the chatat, he shall take off from it. So he removes the fat that covers the innards, the fat that's on the innards, the 2 kidneys, the fat that's on them, by the loins, the lobe above the liver, he takes away by the kidneys. As it is taken from off the ox of the sacrifice of Shalamim. So it's a similar process. And the priest shall make them smoke upon the altar of burnt offering. But the skin of the bullock and its flesh with its head and its with its legs and all of its innards and its dung, even the whole bullock shall be carried forth outside of the camp into a clean place where the ashes are poured out and burn it on wood with fire. Where the ashes are poured out, that's the place where it shall be burnt. Now, that was part A, okay? If an anointed Cohen sins, how about this one? Verse 13 says, and if the whole congregation, Kol Edat Israel, all of them, they err, the thing being hid from the eyes of the assembly. See, nobody knows it. What happened? We don't know. They do any of the things which Yahuwah has commanded not to be done, and in fact, they're guilty. When the sin wherein they have sinned is known, comes out, uh-oh, then the assembly shall offer a young bull for a sin offering and bring it before the tent of meeting. Now this time it's the elders of the congregation that lay their hands as representatives, as leaders, upon the head of the bullock before Yahuwah, and the bullock shall be killed before Yahuwah. The anointed priest shall bring the blood of the bullock to the tent of meeting. The priest shall dip his finger in the blood, and again he sprinkles it 7 times before Yahuwah in front of the veil. He puts of the blood upon the horns of the altar before Yahuwah, which is in the tent of meeting. All the remaining blood he pours out at the base of the altar of burnt offering at the door of the tent of meeting. All the fat thereof shall be taken from off it. He makes it smoke on the altar. Then he does with the bullock as he did with the bullock of the sin offering, the chatat. So does he do this time with this one. And the Kohanim shall make atonement for them, and they shall be forgiven. And he shall carry forth the bullock outside the camp and burn it, just as he did the first bullock. It is a sin offering for the assembly, literally for the Ha'idah, or the Kahal in this case is the assembly. Now, Are we done yet? Well, no, there's going to be another one that sins unintentionally. How about a prince or a ruler, a nasi? When he sins, and he does through error, any one of the things which Yehoahazel has commanded not to be done, he is guilty. Shouldn't have done it, but he did. If his sin, wherein he sinned, is known to him, or when it becomes known to him, well, then he shall bring for his offering a goat, a male without blemish, and he lays his hand, again, same process, upon the head of the goat. The poor goat is going to die because he was ignorant. He kills it in the place where they killed the burnt offering before Yahuwah. It is a chatat, a sin offering. Priest shall take of the blood of the sin offering with his finger, right? We know what's going to happen. He puts it on the horns of the altar, the burnt offering. Notice, there's one thing missing. It's always kind of interesting. He takes the blood of the sin offering with his finger, puts it on the horns of the altar of the burnt offering, and the remaining blood he pours out at the base of the altar of burnt offering. But I don't see the part in there about where he sprinkles it seven times. Let's see. Yep, the other two, they get sprinkled seven times. It's interesting because sometimes we'll notice that the process is almost identical, but there is a difference. And I, you know, if people are going to ask why, and the answer is, I'm not sure. But I guarantee you, it's important if even by omission, the Torah leaves out something in this particular part. So, if it's all the congregation, or if it is an anointed priest, then we do this seven times sprinkle thing. But in the case of this time, where it is the Nasi, the ruler, the prince, that doesn't happen. He takes the blood, he puts it on the horns of the altar, and the remaining blood he pours out at the base of the altar burnt offering. The fat thereof shall be made to smoke upon the altar, as the fat of the sacrifice of Shalamim. Priest shall make atonement for him as concerning his sin, and he shall be forgiven. So the rest is similar. All right, well, we're not done yet. How about an individual? If any one of the common people, the people of the land, sin through error, and this is an interesting, be shagaga, in ignorance. They do one of the things which Yahuwah has commanded not to be done, and they're in fact guilty. Well, then this sin, which he has sinned, when it becomes known to him, then he shall bring for his offering a goat. Now this time, interestingly, it is a female without blemish for his sin which he has sinned. Now, I'll make one other observation at this point, because again, when it's something that is slightly different, it ought to kind of catch our interest, and we ought to say why. And I've always thought, well, what's the difference? Is there a sexual difference between the male and the female? Well, obviously there is. But has it got something to do with why one of them is for the prince and the other is for a person that's a common folk? Because what also interests me here is, if you have raised animals, you understand that in most places and in most cases, a female cow, unless there are some exceptions like, you know, a prize, a bull stud or something. But as a general rule, certainly this is true with goats, and that's what we're talking about here. The female goat is almost always worth more than the male goat. Why? Well, clearly, because female goats can have more kids. Male goats, they can impregnate kids, but one male will do a whole bunch of females. So we don't need as many males as we do females. That's why most of the time the sacrifices are of male goats. And females are more viable also because, of course, they can be milked. So he brings a female. This is a more expensive offering if you think about it in terms of what is being sacrificed here. Then he shall lay his hand upon the head of the sin offering, kill the sin offering in the place of the burnt offering. The priest shall take of the blood thereof with his finger and put it upon the horns of the altar of burnt offering. And all the remaining blood he shall pour out the base of the altar. Notice it again. This is the same thing as what we just saw. No sprinkle seven times. All the fat thereof he takes away. As the fat is taken away from the sacrifice of Shalamim, priest shall make a smoke on the altar for a sweet savor unto Yahuwah, and the priest shall make atonement for him, and he shall be forgiven. Now, if he brings a lamb as his offering for a katat, a sin offering, again, it is a female without blemish. And he shall lay his hand upon the head of the sin offering and kill it for a sin offering in the place where they killed the burnt offering. The priest shall take of the blood. Why are we seeing the same process repeated almost identically? And in one case, it's a sheep, and in the other case, it's a goat. Both cases, it's a female. Priest shall take of the blood of the sin offering with his finger, puts it on the horns of the altar, no sprinkling, and all the remaining blood shall be poured out at the base of the altar. All the fat thereof is taken away, as the fat of the lamb is taken away from the sacrifice of Shalamim. The priest shall make them smoke on the altar upon the offerings of Yahuwah made by fire. The priest shall make atonement for him as touching his sin that he has sinned, and he shall be forgiven. All right, chapter 5. Now it says, if anyone sins, in that he hears the voice of adjuration, he being a witness, whether he's seen or known, if he does not utter it, then he shall bear his iniquity. We see something? We're supposed to talk about it? Or if anyone touches any unclean thing, whether it's the carcass of an unclean beast, or the carcass of unclean cattle, or the carcass of unclean swarming things, and is guilty, and it's hidden from him that he is unclean, or if he touches the uncleanness of man, whatsoever his uncleanness be, wherewith he is unclean, and it's hidden from him, when he knows of it, now he's guilty. Or if anyone swears clearly with his lips to do evil, or to do good, whatsoever it be that a man shall clearly utter with an oath, and it's hidden from him, and when he knows of it, he's guilty in one of these things. So we got a list of things that people can be guilty of, and it might be hidden and they might not know it. Now, how can you make an uttering of your lips and not know it? I guess most of us can probably relate to that. We've said things, and what, did I really say that? I just was angry, I don't remember, right? Shall be that when he is found guilty in one of these things, that he shall confess that whereof he has sinned. Root word is interesting. It's yara there, which is an interesting word. Now, then he shall bring his forfeit, what he owes, unto Yahuwah for his sin which he sinned. Again, a female from the flock, a lamb or a goat, for a chatat, a sin offering, and the priest shall make atonement for him as concerning his sins. And suppose he's not got enough wealth. Remember, a female goat or kid of the lambs is a kind of an expensive sacrifice. So if he doesn't have enough money for that, then he brings his forfeit for that which he has sinned. In this case, two turtle doves or two young pigeons unto Yahuwah, one for a sin offering, the other for an olah, a burnt offering. And he shall bring them unto the priest, who shall offer that which is for the chatat, the sin offering, first. He pinches off its head by the neck, but does not divide it in parts. Then he shall sprinkle the blood of the sin offering upon the side of the altar, the rest of blood drained out at the base of the altar. It is chatat, a sin offering. And he shall prepare the second one for a burnt offering. According to the ordinance, the priest shall make atonement for him as concerning his sin which he sinned, and he shall be forgiven. Now, if his means don't suffice even for the two turtle doves or two young pigeons, then he shall bring his offering for that which he has sinned. This time it's going to be a minha, a tenth part of an ephah of fine flour for a chatat. He puts no oil on it, nor shall he put any frankincense thereon. Frankincense is expensive, folks. It is a chatat. He shall bring it to the priest. The priest, the Kohen, shall take the handful of it as a memorial part thereof, make it smoke on the altar upon the offerings of Yahuwah made by fire. It is a chatat. And the priest shall make atonement for him as touching his sin that he sinned in any of these things, and he shall be forgiven. Now, what about the rest? The remnant shall be the Kohen's as the meal offering. So he eats the rest too. Now, Yahuwah, it says, continued, he spoke to Moshe, and he said, if anyone commits a trespass, right? I didn't know I was trespassing on someplace. I committed something I didn't know it was wrong. A sin through error in the set-apart things of Yahuwah, okay, the holy things, then he shall bring his forfeit unto Yahuwah. A ram without blemish out of the flock, according to the valuation in silver by shekels, after the shovel of the sanctuary, for a guilt offering. And he shall make restitution for that which he's done amiss in the holy thing, and he shall add to it the fifth part. So he doesn't just make whatever it was that he messed up right. He adds 20%, a fifth part, to it. Gives it unto the Kohen. The priest shall make atonement for him with the ram of the guilt offering, and he shall be forgiven. And if anyone sins and does any of the things which Yahuwah has said should not be done, he's commanded they are not to be done, but he doesn't know it, yet he is guilty, then he shall bear his iniquity. And when he then does, he figures it out, he shall bring a ram without blemish out of the flock, according to your valuation, for a guilt offering unto the Kohen. and the priest shall make atonement concerning him for the error which he committed, though he knew it not, and he shall be forgiven. It is a guilt offering. He is certainly, it says, guilty before Yahuwah. He doesn't know it, but he's guilty. Then Yahuwah spoke to Moshe, and he said the following. Now, this is kind of interesting, and it's, I've got this one highlighted, because it's not only a nice summary, but it's certainly something to pay attention to. If anyone sins, they commit a trespass against Yahuwah, and they deal falsely with their neighbor in a matter of deposit, or of a pledge, or of robbery, or they have oppressed their neighbor, or have found that which is lost. Oh, I didn't see it. Nope, don't know what happened to it. They lied. They dealt falsely therein, and they swear to a lie. In any or all of these cases, the things that a man does, sinning therein, well, it shall be, if he has sinned and is guilty, that he shall, restore that which he took, whether it was by robbery, or the thing that he'd gotten by oppression, or the deposit which was deposited with him, or the lost thing which he found. It was an ill-gotten gain. He restores it. Anything about which he's sworn falsely, he shall restore it in full, and add to it another fifth part, and give unto him to whom it appertains, shall he give in the day of his being guilty. So the person that he has wronged, he makes right, and he adds a fifth part to it. Then he shall bring his forfeit unto Yahuwah. This is a pricey reminder. He brings a ram without blemish out of the flock, according to your valuation, for a guilt offering unto the Kohen. And the Kohen shall make atonement for him before Yahuwah, and he shall be forgiven concerning whatsoever he does, so as to be guilty thereby. And that is where this particular Torah portion ends, folks. A rather lengthy portion, lots of stuff, and again, what's interesting to me, of course, even though we can say, oh, well, we can't do most of these things anymore, there are certainly a few things in here we can do, and I can't help but think that when it comes to this understanding, this is going to be a really key understanding that we're going to see play out as we look at, well, especially the things that pertain to what Yeshua did. Everything that we saw in here, with the exception of things like robbery and lying and cheating and stealing, which people tend to do, but of the things that are ultimately the kinds of things for which these offerings are made, they're all unintentional. I didn't know that these were the holy things of Yahuwah. I didn't know that something he commanded I shouldn't have done, I did. Didn't know I touched something that was dead. That's easy enough to believe. So once these things are found out, then there is a process for making them right. And of course, if it's a sin like robbery or oppression of your neighbor or something like that, not only do you make it right to them and add the fifth part to it, then you still make the other offerings.